I am Rahul Pandita, a graduate student at North Carolina State University. And today I'm going to talk about our work of applying natural language processing techniques to bridge the gap between the user's intent as well as the what an application actually achieves. This work was done in collaboration with fellow graduate student Xuxing Shao and Wei Yang, and was advised by Dr. William Ng and Dr. Tao She. As we all know, application markets have become the de facto standard of delivering software on user devices, smartphones, etc. Not only these markets, such as Apple App Store and Google Play Store, provide a way for consumers to find, purchase, download, and install apps, they also assist developers in advertising, selling, and distributing their software. Unfortunately, it also attracts the attention of developers with malicious intent who can also easily share their software with people. So, market security and privacy, addressing them is a primary concern and an ongoing concern in these application markets. So there are primarily two ways of going about that. First one is Apple's closed loop system, where an Apple employee actually manually inspects an application and sees that it actually follows what an application description says it does. In contrast, Google follows a pretty open-ended policy where it says that a user is responsible for explicitly granting permission to privacy and security sensitive resources to an app before installing. So what we can think of this user as doing is what an Apple employee does for an app market. And there is a whole lot of research that shows that users are not well equipped in doing that. And they actually do not comprehend what a permission means in general, and it's very difficult for them to understand what a permission entails. So there is a need for a static and dynamic analysis system which can automate the task of finding these bad apps. And a lot of research has been done in that area as well, and it is embodied in Google's Bouncer that performs static and dynamic analysis to get rid of these bad apps from Play Store. However, is static and dynamic analysis sufficient? So from these static and dynamic analysis techniques, we get sort of templates. One of those templates is that, you know, when you're on a phone and if an application is recording your conversation, that typically is malicious. What happens if, as a user, I want that to happen? I want to record my audio conversation for me to review them later. Such static and dynamic analysis technique would not discriminate between an application that is very forthcoming about this functionality to an application that achieves this functionality stealthily. So there is a caveat. I mean, these techniques are clearly not up to answering the question, what does a user expect? Which brings us to vision of our work, which is bridging the gap between the user expectations as well as the and application behavior. This work is the first concrete step in this direction, and in particular in this work we focus on permissions and application descriptions. And we argue that at least the permissions that are protecting against user understandable resources such as contacts, audio permissions, or for that matter, calendar or camera, should be discussed in an application description. So I present to you our framework that's called Viper. Unlike the venomous snake, Viper essentially is play on words, why permission, and that's exactly what we want the system to do. We want the system to argue on user's behalf why a particular permission is required for an application. And we believe that Viper can assist both users as well as the developers. For instance, for users, they can enhance the experience while installing the apps. So it can tell a user that, hey, this app requests a certain permission, say read contacts, but the description doesn't say what it's going to do with the contacts. On part of the developer, what it can do is it can help them in the way that if they had mistakenly omitted description of a certain permission, it can tell them, hey, you probably missed this description, you should add that up in your application description. And more importantly, it can complement existing static and dynamic program analysis technique to do a better job at keeping the bad applications away from the market, away from the consumers. So I talked about Viper, and I talked about the vision, the Viper, and how it can help this users as well as developers. So how do we go ahead and implement it? Well, the first and the very simple solution that comes to mind is keyword-based search. So every permission has a certain keywords. What you do is you take these keywords and see whether that appears in the description of an application or not. While it is simple and everyone knows how to do that, there is certain problems with that, and two major ones. First and foremost, there is the confounding effects. So certain keywords have this confounding effects. Consider these two statements highlighted in orange. So first one says that it displays user contacts. And the second statement says that simply contact me at certain email address. For a keyword-based search, it will not discriminate against both of these statements and will come up and say that, hey, the description contains both of the contains a statement that has the keyword contact. But actually what is happening is that only the first statement, the former one, is describing why it needs access to contact information. While this is the first problem, we have one more problem with keyword-based search. That is the semantic inference. That is, sometimes developers refer to the need of permission without actually using keywords. For instance, consider the sentence, share yoga exercises with your friends via email and SMS. Over here, for the action of sharing with your friends via email and SMS, the application actually requires to read the contact permission. But of course, the contact keyword doesn't appear in the sentence, so the keyword-based search will fail in this case. One can argue that if we can actually broaden the scope of keywords by adding more keywords to a particular permission, we can catch hold of these sentences. But that process is basically at odds with the first one, that is the confounding effects of the keywords, so we'll get a lot of false positives. So what's our solution, or what's our approach, what's our take towards implementation of Viper? We propose the use of natural language processing to discriminate between the confounding effects of certain keywords as well as to do the deep semantic inference. But it's easier said than done because natural language processing is difficult. Right now, the state-of-the-art natural language processing can only annotate the syntax of a sentence, but that too on well-written news documents. And I tell you and I assure you, the application's descriptions are nothing but well-written. And then however, we have some hope because there are certain domain-specific sentences and domain-specific styles that we can leverage to apply these existing techniques on the application descriptions. So before we move any further, I'm going to briefly introduce what all standard NLP techniques are we using in our work. First of them is parts of speech tagging that annotates the parts of speech of a sentence. That means it annotates what part of speech a word belongs to, whether it's a noun, verb, preposition, so forth and so on. The second is phrase and clause parsing. What it does is it attempts to classify a set of words into certain phrases. Like a set of words like basketball players is a noun phrase and a make sure is a verb phrase, so forth and so on. And then we have Stanford type dependencies. This is more semantic in nature. What happens over here is that it tries to find the relationship that exists between two words in a sentence. For instance, a word can be the subject of another word. A word can be a modifier, adverbial, auxiliary, so forth and so on, of another word. So that annotates that part. And finally, we have named entity recognition. So the So the idea behind using this technique is to reduce the number of words. For instance, Pandora Internet Radio, it's the name of an app, and it actually is three words long. But there is no point in further resolving these three words using the techniques that are showed before. So what we do is we use this named entity recognition to combine all of these words and treat them as a single lexical unit for the earlier techniques to work accurately. So I presented to you the NLP preliminaries, and now I'm going to show you how we use them in our work. Before that, this is the VIPER framework that we propose. It accepts the application description, application permissions, and annotates those application descriptions with the sentences that describe the need for a particular permission. It achieves that by using semantic graphs that are constructed using API documents and commercial off-the-shelf NLP. So we are not doing any research in NLP domain. What we are doing is applying NLP research in NLP domain to our particular case. And there are a lot of engineering problems that we solve. So the first step is pre-processing, probably the most important step. As I told you, as I mentioned earlier, that application descriptions are not really well formed. So there is a need to prepare them or to prep them so that existing NLP techniques work on them. This mainly involves finding the sentence boundaries and then named entity handling to reduce the number of lexical tokens, and again, an abbreviation handling, again, to reduce the whole number of lexical tokens. The idea is if we reduce the number of lexical tokens, the other NLP, standard NLP techniques will perform well. It is going to increase the likelihood of accuracy of the standard NLP techniques. For more details, kindly refer to our paper. The next step is intermediate representation generation. Once we have this process statements, we want to have an intermediate representation over which we can run our algorithms. So intermediate representation generator basically accepts this process statement and then commercial NLP tools to create a first order logic-like representation. So this is a sentence that I presented as an example earlier. Also, you can share yoga exercises to your friends via email and SMS. So the first step, put the POS tags. I mean, annotate the sentence with POS tags. RB stands for adverb, PRP pronoun, MD modifier. And the second step, generate the Stanford type dependency. Over here also is related to the word share because also is adverbial modifier of share. So you is the nominal subject of share, so forth and so on. And once we have this annotation in place, our semantic engine, our text analysis engine constructs this nice first order logic representation. First order logic representation essentially is a binary tree with every leaf node being an entity and every intermediate node being an action applicable on those entities. So over here, you and yoga exercises are two separate entities connected by the action share, and you is the initiator of the action share. So once we have this nice first order logic representation, we take the semantic graphs that have been generated from API documents and pass it on to semantic engine to actually annotate the sentence, basically determining whether the sentence describes the need for a permission or not. So I'll go through the generation of semantic graphs in next couple of slides. I'll directly jump to semantic engine first. So this is our first order logic representation, and this is typically what a knowledge graph looks like. So this is a knowledge graph for contact permission. So all the rectangles are the sub-resources that are associated with contacts that include email, SMS, number, anniversary, so forth and so on. And all the rounded rectangles are the applicable actions on these resources as well as the sub-resources. So how do we find, how do we determine whether a sentence describes the need for a permission? First, we look whether any of the entities, that means the leaf node, contain, have a reference to the word contact. And we figure that that's not the case. Then we iteratively look for every sub-resource and try to find a match. And in this case, we see that, okay, there is a match with the word, there is an entity that exists in the sentence that is an email. So till now, what we have done is an extended form of keyword search. We search with contacts, we search with email. Now, next step is crucial. We want to be sure that this sentence actually describes the need. So what we do is we search for the intermediate nodes. Those are the actions that are applicable on these resources to see if some of the actions are already predefined in the semantic graph. And we see that share is matched with send. We achieve that matching by using standard WordNet dictionary synonyms. So once we have found a resource or a sub-resource as well as an applicable action on the sub-resource, we can tell with relatively high confidence that this sentence actually describes the need for a permission over here, which is contact. Coming back to the main other important aspect, that is a semantic graph generator. So why do we need semantic graphs? Of course, to perform deep semantic analysis of the sentences. And how do we generate semantic graphs? Well, the primary source of information that we have is API documents. So how exactly it is done? So this is a typical API document in Android ecosystem. What we do is we first find API documents that are relevant to a particular permission. In particular, we use the work pscout that was published last year. Once we have this API documents, we figure out the resource it is talking about, which typically is the name of the class. Once we have the name of the class, we look into member variables and the member methods of the class. And typically, the member variables provide us with the information of the sub-resources, such as SMS, email, so forth and so on. And the member methods are typically, the public member methods in particular, are the typically the actions that are applicable on these resources. So now I presented to you the approach, how we annotate a sentence, whether it describes the need for permission. So how do we evaluate, how do we know that Viper actually delivers? So for that, we selected a snapshot of a popular Android application from January 2012, and there were roughly 16,000 of those. From there, we selected these three permissions, read contacts, read calendar, and record audio, which we believe are representative set of permission that we typically want to target, because users understand the resource that these permissions protect. For each of these permissions, we randomly selected 200 applications that requested these permissions. So in all, we had 600 applications, application descriptions. And of 600, we selected 581 because we were considering only the applications that were in English. And there are a lot of application descriptions in other languages. In all, we processed close to 10,000 sentences. Now, the question that we want to answer is Viper effective at determining these sentences or finding these sentences in application description? And the second question that we want to answer is, how effective or how much better Viper is against a simple, naive, keyword-based search? Again, the statistics of the subject application for more clarity. So N stands for the number of applications for each permission. S stands for the total number of sentences. And S and P are the manually annotated sentences that we as authors thought that were describing the need for permission. So in all, as I said, we manually process 10,000 sentences to come up with a set of 763 sentences that were describing the need for a particular permission. So how do we classify the effectiveness of Viper? Well, we use the standard statistical measure of precision, recall, F-score, and accuracy. And these are things that are required to calculate those. So for true positives, how do we define true positives? We define true positives when Viper says a statement is describing the need for a permission and the manual analysis concurs. Similarly, you can see the risk. How do we define false positives, true negatives, and false negatives? Once we have the calculation of precision, recall, and F-score, we determine the effectiveness of Viper. So Over here, S of I are the statements, number of statements that have been annotated by Viper as the statements that describe the need for a particular permission. TP stands for true positives, FP for false positives, FN for false negatives, and TN for true negatives. A whole lot of numbers there, but I'll just give you the refined results. On an average, Viper achieves a precision of roughly 83%, a recall of 81.5%, and an average F score of roughly 82%. So we have a nice, achieve a precision recall and F score roughly 82%. So this is on a sentence level. What does it mean on the application level? So out of 581 application, 109 application consisted of a sentence that Viper thought was a description sentence, but it was actually not. And among 581 application, 86 application consisted of at least one sentence that Viper thought was a description, or thought was not a description sentence, but it actually was. So how do these numbers, although we achieved a precision recall and F score of 82% on an average, how do these numbers compare to keyword-based search? So these are the keywords that we use for comparison. How do we came across with these keywords? Kindly refer to our paper for the methodology. And here is the improvement of Viper against the keyword-based search. So we see there is an 42% improvement in terms of precision when we apply Viper or when we apply the keyword-based search. There is an increase in F score and accuracy as well, but unfortunately there is a decline in the recall of negative 6.6% for a particular permission record audio that brings the overall score to negative 1. And I'm going to explain why it happens. So now I'm going to talk about the fringe elements where Viper doesn't perform well and was one of the causes for the decline in recall when compared to keyword-based search. First and foremost is the incorrect parsing, because as I said, these sentences are not well-written, so the underlying NLP infrastructure fails to accurately annotate them, and we have a problem with that because we rely on these standard NLP techniques. The second one is synonym analysis. Consider this sentence. Kind of controversial. So it says that you can turn recordings into ringtones, but nowhere tells that you can convert existing recording. Currently, you will record and then convert it into ringtones. Viper successfully finds the resource recordings over here and an application action turn. And what happens over here is turn is matched against the start of recording, which is a legal action. But this limitation is because of the synonym analysis, because we use standard English dictionary WordNet. We can alleviate these issues by using domain-specific dictionaries, and we can alleviate a whole lot of issues by as the NLP infrastructure improves. But on a side note, what we can do is for such sentences where we get a lot of issues, we can actually go back to developer and say that, hey, you are wrong, probably writing a whole large sentence or that sentence that is difficult to understand, why don't you write a smaller sentence? Which is highly unlikely, but that might be one of the case. The other results that happens is because of the false negatives. The first reason for the false negative is again because of the incorrect parsing. And the second major reason for the false negatives is because of the limitation of the semantic graph. In particular, when we consider record audio permission, what happens is that most of the descriptions are say that you blow into microphone and then something happens. So the semantic action of blowing is basically you produce some noise and that gets recorded. But from API documents, it's very difficult to infer that line of thought. So because of this limitation, we get a decline in recall. However, if we manually augment our semantic graphs with this information, we get a significant improvement in recalls from a negative 6.6 to a positive 6, which brings the overall score above. So in future, we are trying to find alternative techniques of mining these semantic graphs, maybe from user comments or from forums or some alternative source of information. Having presented the results, now the main question is, how does our results scale to other permissions? I mean, we started off with the user understandable permission, so we think that our approach should work well with other permissions of the similar sort, maybe access to call logs, access sending SMSs, emails, so forth and so on. Although location and phone identifiers are also something what user understands, but given the current usage of these permissions, Viper would generate a lot of warnings because developers typically are not forthcoming about these permissions, which are typically used for advertisement. So we would like, in a practical setting, we would like to gradually roll out Viper first towards the specified control set of permission and then move on towards this larger set of location and phone identifiers. And lastly, we have like really broad set of permission, that is internet. What you can do is you can entail, you can get anything done with internet. So if we try to construct a semantic graph out of it, that would be rendered useless. That would be ineffective in finding the sentences that describe why someone needs internet. So we are trying to find alternate ways of constructing semantic graphs for the internet. In conclusion, I presented a technique to help and bridge the semantic graph between the user expectations and mobile application functions. And I also demonstrated that our proposed technique has a significant improvement over a simple, naive, keyword-based searching. With that, I'd like to thank you all and open up for questions.
Jian Zhang, Microsoft Research, mm-hmm. Very interesting work. But my observation of those application descriptions mm-hmm. are kind of nor complete, neither complete or nor correct.
Right.
Meaning, you know, even you know those permissions like context and stuff. You know, although application says, oh, you know, this is the way that we use the permission, but you know, if you look at the code, there are other uses of permissions that are not described.
Right.
So that said, I would say that you know the cases that users' expectations are violated are related to those cases, mm-hmm. the kind of not obvious use of permissions, which are not described in the application description.
Right.
So that said, I guess I'm a little skeptical that this system will really improve this, I guess reducing the gap, but that's one thing. And the second, have you ever looked at you know the applications that you analyze to see whether you know those applications at least that you looked at had really you know described the correct uses of their the permissions in the description?
Very interesting question. I was expecting that. So the first and foremost, Viper is targeted towards finding the match between permission and description. That's what typically a human does. So I have this application description. I don't know what the application does. If I want to install it, I'll probably read that what exactly it does. So that's the way of getting introduced to the application. Of course, I agree that this analysis by all it itself is not complete. So in order to find the cases where it is not, which is not described over there in the application description, you need some sort of static and dynamic analysis that's there. But what if on the cases where you actually omit descriptions altogether? So one of the famous malware that comes into play over here, I would like to show you is this one in particular. So this one is a typical snake game. And it asks for a lot of permissions. And the description says that a simple snake game. So the first line of defense is basically trying to see that, OK, this requests a lot of permissions. Does it actually have any use of those permissions at all? But of course, the system can be compromised when you're trying to when you upfront say that I'm going to use this permission for an application A, but you're actually doing it for B. For that, you would need deeper program analysis. So that's where I said that Viper is a first line of defense, but not like in complete entirety would defend you against all the malware of the system.
Okay. Adam Chapala, MIT. You mentioned that natural language processing is hard.
Mm-hmm.
ways for malicious application authors to take advantage of knowledge of your system to trick users more effectively than before?
As I said in the last question, the very simple way of using that would be probably put some dummy descriptions. I mean, I'm using your contact information to display contact, but I'm not doing that at all, right? I'm not displaying contacts at all. So, but the important problem that we are trying to address over here is that at least how do you get acquainted, even if you want to test a system. Suppose you're an Apple employee and you want to test a system. The first thing that you will read is a description. Okay, this description does, this application does something. And then once you read that, you have find those points that you want to really test, whether it actually does that or not. That's where we are trying to automate. So as I said, a very straightforward way of like fooling the system would be putting in dummy descriptions altogether. But nonetheless, there would be descriptions. And of course, they're bound to get found out in the sense that, you know, okay, this says something, but it's actually not happening in the application.
Okay, so I think this is a very interesting piece of work. So there may be more questions you can ask after the session. So let's,
Thank you all. Okay.